I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to The Memo. It is Wednesday, June 8th. Happy Ghostbusters Day, Brad. It's Ghostbusters. It's National Ghostbusters Day.
It is. You know, is that a thing? You just made that up.
Nope.
Is there a thing? Reference? I don't remember.
No, the movie came out 32 years ago today.
The first one.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow. No, the new one.
New one comes out next month, right?
It does.
Yeah.
I don't know. I try to look for things when I record weird days that it is, and
Ghostbusters
happens
Day.
To be National Ghostbusters Day today.
Okay. So that'd be 84?
Yeah.
84.
So that's why, yeah. I was born in 82, so that's why, yeah. We definitely grew up on Ghostbusters.
It's also National Best Friends Day, Brad.
Have to make sure I go find my best friend and tell them that and give him a hug.
He's sitting right next to you if you want to.
Hey.
Love you, buddy.
Yeah, I love you too.
Anyway, what was I going to say? The marketing hype for this Ghostbusters movie is
cranked up. Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to give you more days that today is, but that's fine.
Well, while you're looking, have you seen the Kobe Bryant Ghostbusters
commercial? I saw that during the finals the other night.
And it seems like there's another Ghostbusters themed commercial. I forget. But I've noted, Kobe Bryant, the LA Lakers star for the better part of 2 decades, recently retired. So now he's doing the whole endorsement thing again. Which those fell off a few years ago, if you might recall, the endorsements.
The NBA finals have been...
Boy, yeah.
I mean...
Jeez.
There's no nail biters in any of that going on whatsoever. Everybody's winning by like 30 points. I mean, there's no...
This is LeBron James's team getting schooled. And listen, I don't watch the NBA really at all, but this postseason I've kind of gotten back into it a little bit.
I stick with the finals.
Golden State.
Well, Golden
State and Oklahoma City. I started watching that series. Oklahoma City got up 3-1, and I started kind of checking it out just to see if, Golden State set an NBA record for wins in the season this year with 73. And so I was like, wow, it's kind of fascinating if they get knocked out in the NBA semifinals. So kind of started watching it then and just watching. I mean, I've been kind of wanting to because you just hear about Steph Curry all the time, but that team is more than Steph Curry. That game one of the finals, I think he and Klay Thompson, the other big shooter, combined for 20 points. They had like 7 guys in double figures. I mean, that team has probably 8 or 10 guys that could start for most teams. Oh, and the Cavs, they've got LeBron, Kyrie Irving, and some good role players.
May the Cavaliers rest in peace.
Yeah. this could be a sweep. I don't know.
I'm all for the Warriors in this one.
So. I like Golden State. I'd like to see Cleveland's suffering in, but then again, it's Cleveland, so I don't care that much.
Well, today, as I said, National Best Friends Day. It's also National Name Your Poison Day.
Okay.
So, and also National Upsy Daisy Day.
Upsy Daisy.
National Name Your Poison Day is observed each year on June 8th. Over the years, bartenders have been known to use the phrase, what's your poison, or name your poison when asking patrons what they want to drink. This is an observation that celebrates that phrase and is a day to commemorate making a choice or a decision.
Well, today's payday, so I know what my poison is. We'll get me some 6-pack of beer later.
National Upsy Daisy Day. Each year on June 8th, National Upsy Daisy Day is set aside to encourage you to face the day positively and to get up gloriously, gratefully, and gleefully.
That will never happen any day for me, ever.
It's Upsy Daisy, not Oopsie Daisy.
That's Upsy Daisy.
It's difference.
It's not Oopsie Daisy. Tomorrow.
You named the wrong poison, so.
National Earl Day. I'm a fan of this one.
Remember that song by the Dixie Chicks, Earl Had to Die?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do.
That was
June 9th is dedicated to those with a particular qualification and a genuine capacity for achievement on National Earl Day. We honor those legends named Earl.
Let's think of some Earls.
It's an uncommon name these days, but hopefully those who have the privilege of being so named have earned it.
Two right off the bat. Earl Scruggs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He basically reinvented the way to play the banjo.
Mm-hmm.
Earl Weaver. Former Earl Weaver.
Earl Campbell is going to be the one I was going to say.
Earl Campbell.
Running back.
My grandma, in her New Orleans accent, calls oil Earl.
Earl.
Put some Earl in the car.
Up through the Earl came a bubbling... No, I can't figure that out. Brad left.
Yeah. Had to call that, apparently. He thought was important.
Also, the National Donald Duck Day tomorrow.
Can you do a Donald Duck? There you go.
There you go. That's my best.
It works.
National Donald Duck Day is observed annually on June 9th. The day commemorates the birthday of the funny animal cartoon character Donald Duck. Made his first screen debut in 1934, The Wise Little Hen. Can you do a Donald Duck for us, Brett?
I cannot do a Donald Duck or pretty much any other impression, no.
There you go.
Cannot do that.
There you go. National Strawberry Rhubarb Pie Day.
Never had one of those.
Garrison Keillor.
And National Career Nursing Assistance Day. So that's all the tomorrow. What? There you go.
Big week.
June 10th is National Iced Tea Day.
So that's every day for my wife.
There you go.
Sweet or unsweet? For the June 10th, does it specify?
Just iced tea.
All right.
Unsweet tea is an abomination, let's be honest. Come on.
That's just dark water.
That's all it is.
Caffeinated water, maybe.
Yeah. I'm also going to be, y'all won't see me on Friday. I'll be celebrating National Ballpoint Pen Day. I'm going all
That's
out.
Your day off,
that
too.
That is my day off. I know how I'm celebrating.
He'll be drawing on his arms
how
all day.
How do you celebrate National Ballpoint
Pen Day? How do I not? Let me count the ways.
Is there a National Podcast Day?
There's not. Yeah, we did have that one day.
Did we? Yeah, I think we did.
It was not long after we started.
Yeah.
Remember that now.
We were putting it on our...
basically, there's a day for everything.
Yeah, there is.
We did National Brad.
Well, there's 365 of them, Brad. So, and as you see, you can double up on.
We need a National Brad Lock Day for all the famous Brad Locks, which probably there's actually none.
There's National. There's later in June, you can find the National Pop Goes the Weasel Day. National Apple Strudel Day, National Cherry Tart Day, Father's Day.
You ever
I've heard of that one.
You ever Google your own name?
Yeah, don't do that.
No. You ever. Shouldn't, but I did.
No. Well,
just now. A bunch of links to like my blog and my old blog and
what's good it's you.
My National Peaches
my
and
LinkedIn,
Cream Day.
My Twitter.
What are we doing?
My Facebook.
We've gone down a rabbit hole I don't want to go down.
You sure have.
I'm staying on
YouTube. It's all yeah.
This is far more interesting over here. Come back. Climb out of the hole.
Page
and come
one
back up
has
here.
An old story that I wrote about Renardo Sidney. Good heavens. I'm still trying to forget that period in my life.
National Take Your Dog to Work Day.
Don't want my dog coming into
June
work.
June 26th.
It's
also National Catfish Day. So.
Oh, I've been catfishing forever.
National Meteor Watch Day. National Waffle Iron Day.
Why don't they ever have catfish at these journal luncheons? It's always chicken, which is great. I love chicken. But like mix it up, throw in some catfish.
Change up a little bit.
I'm just saying. I'm trying to find some Brad Locks who besides me on here. Here's a marketing director at Mars Pet Care by that name. Huh. Anyway, moving on. What we got on the show today?
I don't know, Brad. You
we got
me.
William Moore talking about cops on bikes.
Why don't you Google it and see if you can find it?
We've got, shut up. We've got Caleb Bedillion coming on to talk about some changes with the local precincts. And voting machines as well, trying to upgrade the voting machines. We've got Jenna Parsons to talk about food and special guest, and y'all want to make sure you stick around for this one. Alex Mullen, international memory champ.
You want to remember to stick around.
He
for
won
this
the
one.
World. Yeah, don't forget. He won the world memory championship. He's an Oxford High School graduate, living in Jackson now, so he's going to join us via the telephone. Looking forward to that.
Okay.
Hope I don't forget any of the questions.
I
like
hope
to ask
you do
him.
Not. Okay. I know he won't.
That'd be embarrassing.
All right.
But he'll help you. He'll help you remember. He's got a company now that helps.
He does.
Remember things,
he got a so. Website and everything. So anyway, yeah, we'll get it. We'll have him on shortly and other good stuff. Full show today. So let's do it. Today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, formerly known as Palmer's. The locally owned grocery store still offers high quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. Visit Shoppers Value Foods on East Main. Okay, let's go to the cell phone. We've got a special guest on the program today, Alex Mullen, and you may know the name because we had a story on him recently. He is the international memory champion. He recently won the World Memory Championships in China. Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on. Alex is an Oxford High School graduate living down in Jackson now, aren't you, Alex? What's going on down there?
Yeah, I'm in Jackson at the med school down here, yeah.
Okay. Well, tell you what, man. You're the first person from the U.S. to win this contest, which in itself is pretty cool. Can you kind of give us a feel of just what it's like to be that guy?
I don't know. You know, it's one of those things where I've been competing at this memory competition scene for a few years now, and even going into the contest last year, I definitely didn't expect to win. I was sort of hoping to maybe get in the top five or maybe top three. That was sort of my best case scenario. So I didn't really even mentally prepare for actually winning it. So I don't think I really understood what it was. I didn't really prepare mentally for what it was going to be like. So it was sort of a surreal experience for me toward the end.
Yeah, I bet. Tell us a little bit about what this involves, Alex. I think people get a good idea. You're a memory champion. That means you're good at memorizing things, remembering things. How'd you get started in this? I know there was a book you read called Moonwalking with Einstein, The Art and Science of Remembering Everything by Joshua Foer. Well, what did that just kind of ignite a spark in you when you read it? What was the...
Yeah, exactly. So, I guess I should say up front, definitely don't have a very naturally good memory. I mean, I think I maybe have a decent memory, maybe not a bad one, but certainly not like extraordinary or superhuman memory or anything like that. And it wasn't until my junior year of college when I read that book you mentioned, Moonwalking with Einstein, and learned about the techniques. So all the people in these competitions, literally everyone that I've met doesn't really have extraordinary memories. They use these memory techniques, techniques that have been around since ancient Greece and Rome. And essentially the idea is you just try to visualize whatever it is you want to remember.
Yeah.
And so, turning, like, say, numbers or cards or random words or names into images or things you can visualize makes it a lot more memorable. So, that's the basic technique, and that's what I learned from the book, and then I just started practicing and getting a little more hooked on the competitions and things like that, and just sort of snowballs from there.
Yeah, and you use this technique, this idea of memory palaces, which reading about it seems kind of weird, but it also kind of makes sense that it would work. Kind of explain what that's about.
Sure, yeah. So I mentioned that, visualization is a key part of the process. And then so there's kind of two key things going on. One of them is visualization. The other one is based on the fact that humans have really good spatial memories.
Yeah.
So you think about your house that you live right now, even going back as far as like your old elementary school, places that you haven't been for a really long time, humans are just really naturally good at remembering spaces. And I think it probably, I don't really know this, of course, but I've heard, it probably goes back to something like, old hunter-gatherer times trying to, you need to get back to the camp or whatever, it's a very evolutionary sort of thing. And those are things that humans are really good at. We're not very good at remembering random digits or random words because those things just don't have any meaning.
Yeah.
But if you use these spaces that you're familiar with, like I said, your house or your route to work or your office or wherever, in the competition I have preset paths through these different places. So say I'll start at my mailbox and then go to my driveway and then the tree in my front yard and then a bush next to my front door and then the front door and just kind of going on like that, and I turn the information into images and then imagine those images on these different spots along the path in my memory palace, and that's how I pretty much do all of the events.
And this memory palace can be anything that you're familiar with, maybe your home or anything like that?
Yeah, essentially. So, when I kind of started, I just went through, I tried to brainstorm as many places as I could, any places I've lived, places I've gone to school, places on my college campus or med school campus or restaurants I like, anything like that can be pretty effective. I've even found that, sometimes using places you haven't even been to, like either, things like video games or even, TV show sets that you're familiar with, like all of those things work pretty well.
You had to put a lot of work into this, obviously, to get to where you're at. Just using an example from the story we had the other day, looking at a 52-card deck, each card can be paired with, the other 51 cards in different ways. So you got more than 2,000 possible two-card combinations, and you basically had to create these mental pictures for each of these 2,000-plus possibilities, these 2,000-plus combinations, right? That had to be time-consuming.
Yeah, absolutely. So, there are different types of systems that people use. So obviously, for the events like numbers or cards or things that are abstract, you have to, the competitors all have some sort of system to convert that information into images that's placed in the memory palace. So yeah, there are different types of systems people use. The one I use, like you said, more than 2,000 images is definitely one of the more complicated and large systems. Some people just have like 52 images for each of the 52 cards, but I have one for each pair of cards, so that ends up being a lot of images.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I read through a deck, I'm sort of looking at. I mean, this takes a lot of practice, obviously, but I look at the card and convert each pair into an image, and then we'll place that image onto a spot in the memory pile, and then just keep going. Just like that.
I'm curious, when somebody finds out the what you've done here with the winning the international championship and being really good at this, do they always try to like test you, like just throw a string of numbers at you and get you to repeat them back?
Sometimes, occasionally, it definitely makes me, at least me, a little nervous about forgetting things, about forgetting people's name. But I think your name's Brad, right?
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Yes.
And. Yeah, so it definitely makes me a little nervous. I think one of the most common reactions I get is, we should go to Vegas together.
Yeah, count cards, yeah. Oh, man. You mentioned names, by the way. I am one of the worst people at remembering names, so I'm totally down with any tips that you might have for remembering someone's name, because someone will tell me their name, and I'll forget it instantly.
Yeah, well, so my main, thought about names is that it's mostly a focus issue. So not even thinking about memory techniques. A lot of times you forget people's names because you go up to them, you shake their hand, and then you're too busy thinking about what you're going to say next that you don't even register when they say their name.
Right.
So if you really, one thing that I like to say is just, if you go up to somebody and just in your head, just say to yourself, okay, I'm going to remember their name. Like, what's their name? And if you just really force yourself to focus on the name, often that's enough to remember it.
Right.
But then obviously, in the competitions, I just, because of the events, if it's a 15-minute names event, I'll have to memorize, 150 to 200 names. So that's a little difficult to just do based on focus alone.
Right.
So, for that, I use a system that I sort of call feature image. And so all that means is that I try to pick a distinctive feature about the person. So that could be, maybe their hair is a little wavy, or they have, bushy eyebrows, or maybe they're smiling really big, or
Brad's really ugly, Alex, if that helps.
Something that sticks out to me about the face, because in the competitions they just give you mugshots of people's faces.
Yeah.
And then I'll, just like with the cards or numbers or whatever, I'll turn their name into an image and then imagine that image interacting with the feature, the eyebrows or the hair or whatever, in some sort of interesting way. And so that's how I do it.
Cool. Okay. Well, you got a website with your wife, MullenMemory.com, and featuring lessons on the mental tools that y'all have learned. And your wife is into this too, isn't she?
Right. She doesn't compete, but right. When I first learned about it a few years back, I talked to her about it a lot, and she started using the techniques, and so we both use them all the time in our med school studies. She's also a medical student, and so, we work on this website together, and we try to put out, information and tutorials and things together. It's definitely nice because she's kind of, she keeps me grounded in reality. sometimes I'll look at things from the perspective of somebody who's been competing for a while, and then she kind of has the perspective of somebody who's not quite as used to the, competition style of it.
Yeah.
So it's definitely helpful to have two of us.
Yeah, and some of these techniques I think it looks you want to try to help students use some of these, which they're different from competition techniques, but you're trying to, I guess, help students get past that learn and forget kind of thing, which was basically me in college. I'd learn what I needed to pass the class, and then I forgot it.
That was me, me too. My main interest in terms of outside of the competition world is definitely to help students use the techniques, because my wife and I use the techniques a lot to study, and we find it really useful for remembering things, more long term than just trying to cram for a test and forget. It's definitely helpful for keeping the information more longer term.
Right.
When I talk about memory techniques, I really think they're a useful tool. I certainly don't think that people should memorize everything, or that memorization is essential, it's like the only thing you should be doing. Obviously think that you need to focus on the concepts and understanding things, and then you use these memory techniques as a way to sort of, give you hooks to remember some of the more essential or minute details. And so we really like focusing on memory techniques for students and helping them, you know, use the techniques for school and learning. Because that's really, you know, we're med students right now trying to study pretty hard.
Yeah.
So that's the thing we're interested in ourselves.
Alex, I'm wondering, is that kind of what got you into this in the first place? Is that why you read Moonwalk with Einstein, was looking for tips for med school?
Yeah, pretty much exactly, yeah. So I read it the first time in, I watched it, actually his TED Talk, which is sort of a broad strokes overview of his book, and I was like, oh, wow, this is, you know, I thought, okay, there's got to be some sort of application that I can use from these techniques for school. You know, this is such a powerful ability that people have built in, and for some reason, nobody's really using it in you know, academic life. So I was really determined to try to make it work, and so initially that was my focus going in, was to take the techniques and learn, you know, the information for school better so I would remember it longer, obviously. And you know, what basically happened was that I started practicing numbers and cards and things like, you know, the competition events, just to get a better handle on the techniques and how they work. And basically just got hooked, yeah, and started practicing those and just started going to competitions and stuff. And you know, and the thing was, I tried at first to apply them to school, and I got a little stuck in some places and didn't really find it as effective as I wanted it to be. And so that was part of the thing that pushed me more in the direction of competitions. But then finally, when I got to med school, you know, a few years later, I was like, okay, I'm going to really sit down and try to figure out what's holding me up here. And thankfully, my wife and I, you know, experimented a lot and worked through some of the roadblocks that I was running into and we were running into. And so we think we have a, you know, pretty sustainable way of using the techniques now that we find helpful.
Alex, this is Derek. I got a question for you before we let you go. We appreciate you coming on. My initial question was, does this help you in arguments with your wife to win those? But I guess since she both do it, she it doesn't help either one of you.
Another thing that I get, another comment I get a lot. I wish it helped more. It's not really quite one of those things. I wouldn't say that it really improves my like natural memory at all, or that I, you know, just am unconsciously applying it all the time in my life. It still tends to be more of an active process for me, you know, when I'm studying or when I'm obviously doing competition type things. I wish it helped me a little more there.
Well, with that being said, living in Jackson, have you memorized where all the potholes are so you can avoid those?
I did not need any memory techniques for that. I know them pretty well by now.
All right, well, the website again is mullenmemory.com. Alex Mullen, international memory champ, originally from Oxford, went to Johns Hopkins, and now at med school down there in Jackson. Alex, you want to keep competing? I mean, you kind of reached the top already, but you want to keep doing it?
Yeah, I'm at least for the foreseeable future, I am. Yeah, I'm actually going to. So let's see, I had a competition in early May, which was the U.S. National Championships, which I won, thankfully. And then I have one actually coming up in about 2 weeks in San Diego that I'm going to go to.
Cool. Okay. Well, good deal,
yeah,
Alex.
So we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Well, good luck, Alex. And we certainly appreciate you taking some time to come talk with us. And I'm going to have to try to like get into this because I just have the worst short-term memory. Ask my wife; she'll tell me something. She'll tell me something, and then the next day I'm like, I don't remember you saying that at all.
Yeah, I still leave the stove on and forget my keys all the time. So it's not really a cure-all.
Alex, all right, man. Again, thank you for coming on, man. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Need to remind you all of the two sports podcasts that we produce here at the Daily Journal. We've got Prep Rally, a high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phelps every Wednesday. So check out a new episode. We'll drop this afternoon. You can listen for free on iTunes, your podcast app, or at preprally.djournal.com. It's also a webcast, so if you don't catch it live, watch the replay at djournal.com. And Double Coverage, MSU and Ole Miss Sports Talk with Logan Lowry and Parrish Alford every Thursday. You can listen to that for free as well on iTunes, your podcast app, or doublecoverage.djournal.com.
Also, I want to remind you that djournal.com is now free from the first click to the last. We have recently removed our paywall. We've also increased our multimedia content by launching new products ranging from videos to webcasts, as well as these podcasts we do right here. The website complements our print product, the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. So you can visit djournal.com to stay informed on the latest news in Northeast Mississippi. There's no limit to what you can do there. So come, stay a while, and leave informed about the communities we serve.
Let's welcome in Caleb Bedillion to the program, our local government reporter. Hello, Caleb. How are you?
I am well, Brad. Glad to be here today.
Glad to have you. Let's talk about election type stuff. Why don't we?
Sure thing.
New Lee County Circuit Clerk Camila Roberts. I guess basically what she's trying to do is kind of streamline things in regards to the. It's two things. First, the voting machines, upgrading those. We'll get to those in a minute. But she also wants to kind of, I guess, streamline the whole precinct setup because we got 38 precincts in Lee County. She thinks that's too many. Wants to reduce 13 of them. I mean, does that mean basically eliminate 13 of them?
Right, right. Yeah. She's proposing to spend a little money and save a little money. Now, right. Spending the money would be on the machines, right. And then saving some money, yes, would be on the precincts. Lee County right now has 38 voting precincts. That is comparable to counties like DeSoto County or Harrison County, but the population in those counties is much higher.
Yeah.
So if you look at our peers, circuit clerk does not think that we need to be spending the money on 38 precincts, particularly if you look at the voting turnout in some of these precincts.
Yeah.
She says sometimes it's quite low.
Yeah.
And when you consider that in these presidential primaries we just had in the spring, the county spent $50,000 total on the entire primary just here in Lee County.
Huh.
So now it's primaries are more because you have to have Democratic and Republican tables. That means paying Democratic and Republican poll workers.
Right.
Now in a county election, you can also have runoffs, and those are also party runoffs. So if you have a primary race and then runoffs, you're looking at doubling your cost. And so if you eliminate precincts, then that's money you're saving every time you have an election.
Right, okay.
So the 13 precincts she wants to eliminate, yes, the voters that normally vote there now would be assigned a new precinct.
I just recently was able to remember exactly where I go vote most times, although it depends on the election.
Did you use your memory palace?
I'm going to be confused again. Do what?
Did you use your memory palace?
My memory palace? No, I haven't built that yet.
Okay.
I just learned about it, Derek. Give me time.
Okay, sorry.
Things take time.
Okay.
Anyway, Caleb, trying to save some money because like you said, 38 precincts for 46,000 registered voters. You mentioned these other counties up in the northwest part of the state. They've got about the same number, but more than twice the population.
Right. DeSoto County has 99,000 registered voters and 39 precincts.
Right.
Harrison County, that's down on the coast, has 109,000 voters and 58 precincts.
Wow.
So if you do the math, Lee County has basically 1,226 voters per precinct, whereas, say, DeSoto has a little bit more than 2,500 voters per precinct. So the precincts where voters would be reassigned in some cases are as close as 1.5 miles away, so you're not driving that much further.
Right, right.
Some of the precincts would be, 4 or 5 miles away, so it would be a somewhat increase in burden on the voters, but circuit clerk doesn't think it's significant.
Well, I married a St. Louis girl, and she always likes to point out that going across town in Tupelo, you're like, got to go all the way across town. Well, that's 10 minutes. In St. Louis, it's 30 minutes to everywhere. Okay. So I think that would be, be okay.
Right. Need to remember this only affects county precincts. So say Tupelo voters, your municipal voting precinct where you go, say, to cast your ballot for mayor, that would not be affected by this.
So that would not be, like I live in Tupelo, that wouldn't affect me. But what about when we're, again, electing county supervisors?
Yeah, county supervisors, basically your countywide elections. So say in 4 years, last year we elected new terms for governor, attorney general, state legislature, and yes, our county supervisors, our circuit clerk, that kind of stuff. Those races, yes, those are what would be affected here.
Okay. Now on to voting machines, the machines that accept the ballots.
Right.
I'm old enough that I remember when there was an actual machine you had to go pull the hand crank on to vote. Yeah, I remember doing that. That's how old I am.
Yeah. Now,
but now you just fill out the ballot with a pen and you put it in this machine.
Right. If you've cast a ballot in Lee County any time since the old lever machines were discontinued, then you know that, yes, you fill out a paper ballot and put that into a machine. The machine scans the ballot, determines what votes you cast, and records that electronically. But the ballot is retained.
Right.
So that way you have a paper trail. So theoretically, there could be a manual hand count of every ballot cast. But that's only you would only do that in emergencies.
Right.
The standard way is you have the electronic record, and that's how you tabulate the votes at the end of the night. Now, these tabulators, as they're called, that scan the ballots, are from 1992.
Wow, so they're kind of at the end of their run.
They are. Now, the county bought them in, I think it was 2005, but Lee County bought them used. So, again, they're quite old. They're not just used for county elections, but some of the municipalities in the county also use these machines for their municipal elections. So these machines see a lot of use. They're starting to break down. There's like a little LCD screen on them that's starting to malfunction on some of the machines. And they're so old, it's quite difficult to find parts for the machines.
Oh, I bet. So what kind of machines are they looking to get?
It's going
to
be very similar. It'll be, as far as the voter is concerned, it will work almost the same way. If the supervisors authorize the circuit clerk to buy these new machines, you'll still fill out your paper ballot. That's something the supervisors are very concerned about, that we're still on paper ballots.
Right.
That's not changing. You'll feed it into the machine. There will be a much larger screen on the machine, kind of like an iPad, except it'll be mounted on top of the machine. And what it'll do is, once you insert your ballot, it will scan it. Now, if you did what's called undervoting, let's say like in the fall, you only want to vote for president. You don't care about any of the other races that are on there.
Right.
It will tell you there are open races you haven't cast a ballot for. Do you wish to cast a ballot for these races?
Okay.
If you change your mind, it will kick the ballot back out to you, and you get a do-over. Now, you're allowed to. You can't only vote for president or any other race and leave the others blank. So if that's what you want, you just will put on the screen, cast ballot anyway, and it will do that. But you'll have an option. And if you overvote, let's say you fill out, you get a little confused and you fill out the bubble on the ballot for Hillary Clinton and for Donald Trump.
I'm gonna vote for Clinton and Trump.
Well, that's the problem. That won't count. So it will tell you you've overvoted. Now,
also tell you you're a moron? No, just kidding.
I'm afraid the screen won't tell you that. But anyway, I assume, I'm not sure on this, you may have the option to still go ahead and cast the ballot, but quick tip here, folks, it won't count.
Yeah.
You can't vote for two candidates in the same race.
Cannot
but anyway, it will at least tell you that and what you've done and give you a chance to change your mind or proceed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm thinking of maybe just leaving the presidential field.
That's
blank.
An option as well for those that are a little dismayed by our options here.
Yes, very dismayed. But anyway, good story here, Caleb, that was in Tuesday's journal.
Right, now let's make sure the precinct closing is only a proposal right now. The circuit clerk and the election commissioners are behind the idea. Some supervisors, they seemed a little queasy. Folks may not be too happy if you start closing their precinct, but, we'll see what happens.
Okay. Good stuff, Caleb. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Have a good day.
Hey, don't forget about Capital View, a webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capital Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. You can watch live on Monday afternoons at 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. The 2016 legislative session is now over, but Bobby will continue to provide perspective about the news coming out of the state capitol. Time now for today's news memo, and for more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. The Tupelo Public Works Department is currently overseeing a selective pruning of the city's tree canopy to remove or trim dead and dying trees. Sometimes the trees are too far gone and have to come down. Other times, dead limbs are trimmed out. David Knight of the Public Works Department inspects the city's tree stock to stay on the lookout for older trees that may be at hazard of falling or dropping limbs. Last September, officials with the city and the Mississippi Forestry Commission conducted a comprehensive survey of trees across public property in Tupelo. It identified more than 700 trees in need of work.
The Lee County School District announced two principals last week. Longtime Saltillo Primary Principal Ken Smith retired at the end of the school year and will be replaced by Kay Davis. Davis has been at Saltillo Primary as an assistant principal for several years and has worked in the school district for nearly 20 years. Casey Dye will become principal at Guntown Middle School. He has been working as the district's director of federal programs. Stephen Havens, who is principal at Guntown Middle, will become federal programs director.
Tupelo residents will see higher water and sewer bills beginning in July. On Tuesday, the City Council approved a rate hike of 9.8% for all customers of Tupelo Water and Light. This is the first water rate increase enacted by TWNL since 2006. The total rate increase will be phased in over two smaller increases. A 5% increase becomes effective on July 7th. A second hike will become effective later in the year in October. Tupelo Water and Light Director Johnny Timmons said based on an average family usage of 1,300 cubic feet of water per month, the average customer will see an increase of about $2 per bill. The increase is needed to help TWNL absorb rising sewer sanitation costs.
A new traffic light at the intersection of North Gloucester Street and Spicer Drive will go live on Thursday. Spicer Drive provides access to some hotels as well as Lavino Wine Store. A Texas Roadhouse restaurant will also be built near the intersection according to current plans. Tupelo Water and Light Director Johnny Timmons said the light is currently in flash mode, but the signal will be activated on Thursday. It will also feature a flashing yellow left turn arrow, reminding drivers that the left-hand turning traffic must yield.
State Auditor Stacy Pickering is being called to active duty in the Mississippi Air National Guard. Auditor's Office spokeswoman Kelly Ryan said Tuesday that Pickering will be deployed within the next week to a military base in Nevada in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. Ryan said Pickering will remain in touch with employees at the Auditor's Office and will continue to be in charge of the agency. I need to remind you that today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods. It's a locally owned grocery store on East Main. The store recently changed its name from Palmer's, but the owners and the employees haven't changed. Damon Palmer and his brother Jason are the third generation owners of the East Tupelo grocery store that was founded in 1957. The Palmer brothers have teamed up with the last year's Grocery Wholesaler of the Year and decided to go with their Cost Plus program, so the store now sells its groceries at 10% over cost. That's allowed it to add more variety, especially in the meat, produce, and dairy departments. And along with the name change came a refreshing of the interior, new signs, better parking, so you can visit Shoppers Value Foods for high-quality selection, great customer service, and low prices, again, on East Main.
William Moore joining us now to discuss cops on bikes.
Bicycle patrols.
But not skateboards or anything like that. Is that next? Are we moving to skateboards after we tackle bicycles?
Probably not. That involves a whole nother level of dexterity.
Roller cops, rollerblade cops.
You got cops on Segways.
It's like an 80s movie.
Don't you?
Was it cops on rollerblades? Wasn't that an 80s movie?
It probably was.
It's like a Village People type scenario. Anyway, but for this argument, we're just talking about bicycles.
We're talking about police officers on bicycles, so patrolling urban areas.
Tupelo PD getting some new bikes.
Well, Tupelo is actually, they're in the process. They've had a bike patrol unit for almost 20 years, mm-hmm. and it sort of fell by the wayside, and so they're looking to get back into the bike business. Pontotoc, the city police, is the one who's really using them right at the moment. And New Albany, because of the Tanglefoot Trail, is getting ready to get their own bike patrol unit so that they can patrol their downtown area, the city parks, and Tanglefoot Trail.
How long is the Tanglefoot Trail? That's
Tanglefoot Trail is 44 miles long. Goes from Houston to New Albany.
That's a lot of area you can't take a patrol car down.
Well, I mean, officially it says, you know, no motorized vehicles, yeah. But if you were a police officer, you know, they could get a motorcycle on there. But
if you have to, you do anything.
Oh, my dad is the trail manager, and he took his Mercedes on his whatever car he had at the time. He took his car onto the trail to check something out or to show it to somebody. So you can't fit a car on there.
Well, you can. You're just not.
And then a patrol car pulled up behind him, didn't know it was him.
Well, there you go. They were already on top of it. So it's been since, you said about 20 years, been since around 98 since Tupelo started.
Tupelo started theirs, and, you know, they were using it a lot at the time. They started out around the mall doing downtown stuff. They're looking to get back into it. One of the reasons is because there's more and more festivals in Tupelo are now focusing on downtown, mm-hmm. Fair Park, And it's just when you get bicycles, it's a whole lot easier to move in and out of crowds, in and out of traffic. You know, if something does happen, that's one of the things that Pontotoc police chief was talking about last year at their 4th of July celebration. There was a medical incident, you know, somebody needed medical care, and there was no way for a police car to actually go through the crowd and, you know, but police officers on bicycles were able to, you know, to zip through the crowd, go over the grass, get to the person, assess the situation, and, you know, take care of things.
Far more maneuverability than a Segway.
Yeah, well, see, actually, some of the folks have actually thought, you know, just for helping patrol downtown areas and the Tanglefoot Trail have thought about Segways.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Tupelo has Segways downtown, but if you're trying to do anything along the length of, like, the Tanglefoot Trail, you don't want to rely on something that is battery-powered. You know, especially because Pontotoc has, like, 5 miles just inside their city limits of the Tanglefoot Trail. You know, there are other places, you know, when you get out in the county, other, you know, sheriff's departments that are helping patrol those areas, they're looking at other things like golf carts to help patrol the trail.
So we're seeing an increase there. We're seeing an increase, like you said, in New Albany. I mean, it kind of does almost seem antiquated in a way, but
it depends on what your need is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things, you know, the folks in New Albany have figured out, all right, their downtown area is something, just the way their situation is. I mean, because they have the downtown area, they need to patrol because they've just started with a 2-hour parking downtown.
Right.
And then right next to it, they have the Tanglefoot Trail, and then they have the park along the river, and then they have the sportsplex. And the way it's set up, it'll be easy for them to map out a patrol where the actual bike officers can actually have a route that they'll be able to circle, you know, and patrol these areas on a regular basis.
Downtown Tupelo, obviously, as you said, with all the festivals, great place to have it. Are they still using any in the mall area? I haven't seen any in a long time. Well, seems like you get run over there now.
Yeah, that's sort of falling by the wayside.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're backing up and trying to figure out exactly what they need to do now and where it would be feasible to patrol. You know, there's just so much traffic now at the mall area. If you try to put somebody on a bicycle out there at Christmas time, somebody get run over.
And the good thing is, I guess, from Best Buy all the way to Office Max and Toys R Us, you can access all of that without getting on Gloucester.
Right. And well, see, that's the other thing. One of the larger,
not easily,
longer term plans for that is they're going to connect that road just east of Gloucester to connect the backside, like from Best Buy, Buffalo Wild Wings, behind Lowe's. The mall.
Yeah. Now you have to drive through the Lowe's parking lot to get to that little side road.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be a full road eventually.
Which makes the most sense.
Yes.
However, that's not what we're talking about right now. I'm just thinking getting on a bike in that busy Gloucester traffic is dangerous.
True.
Even for a police officer. Which I am not. Nor do I ride a bike. So
I haven't ridden a bike in years.
Well, you know, it's just, you get right back on. That's what they tell me.
I'm sure, yeah.
You never forget.
Stationary bikes don't count.
They don't go anywhere.
No. Can't fall off.
Actually, you can.
I guess you could. I haven't yet.
All right, William, thanks for joining us.
All right, glad to do it.
It's Wednesday. That means Jenna Parsons is here to talk to us about some food. Hello, Jenna. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Brad?
I'm all right. Really, really, really wish you'd brought those chicken meatballs in here with you.
I should have brought some chicken meatballs.
Sound
today.
Delicious.
Because they're even good, like room temp.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's Jenna's column today. Chicken meatballs with a little island flavor. What has some? What do you throw in there? Pineapples.
Ginger, garlic, scallions, and then has a homemade teriyaki sauce on.
Made the sauce too.
On top, made the sauce too. But I was talking with somebody yesterday and they were talking about recipes that have, you know, 8 or 10 ingredients. They're not going to make a recipe that long. And I said, well, then you may not make the recipe that's in Wednesday's food section in my column. However, several of the ingredients that are in the meatballs are also in the sauce. So if you've got to chop the garlic and the ginger for the meatballs, go ahead and chop it for the sauce, set it aside, save a little time.
Okay. Yeah, and you got this idea just by walking through Sam's.
Well, I kind of ripped off this. I think it's Bruce Adelis. I'm not sure, but it's a line of food products, and it has this little picture at the top. And I saw these chicken meatballs, and I just flipped over and looked at the ingredients, and they were a little higher in fat and sodium than I liked. And the price, it was a hefty price too. It was like $13 for a little package of meatballs. And so I called my husband over and I said, I think we can do these at home. And so I got online and Googled and found about 15 recipes and found one that sounded good. And I was a little leery because I don't know, have y'all ever worked with ground chicken or ground turkey?
Not very much.
Like handled it. It's kind of wet. It's not like ground beef. And then you add other liquids to it. And so they were kind of not soupy, but I could not have formed them into balls to put them onto a baking sheet. So I took a tip and put them in little mini muffin cups, and they were perfect and delicious.
And you didn't use just chicken. You threw some turkey in there.
Well, ground chicken has 9 grams of fat per serving because it's white meat and dark meat. And ground turkey breast only has 1.5 grams of fat per serving. So I mixed 1/2 pound of the ground turkey with 1 pound of the ground chicken to make them a little bit leaner.
As much as I love chicken, I want to say turkey's maybe a slightly superior meat. Just a side thought there. What do you think, Jenna? Turkey or chicken, what's better?
You know, I like them both.
Thank you for joining us on NPR.
I probably eat more chicken because turkey is so expensive, except at the holiday season when they put it on sale.
Well, anyway, so can you describe as best you can the taste of these Hawaiian meatballs? Because, like I said, they sound delicious, and I really wish you'd brought some.
Well, if you like the flavors of garlic and fresh ginger and pineapple, you will like them. So they are a little bit zingy, and they are a little sweet because the homemade teriyaki's got some brown sugar in it.
Yeah.
And, of course, the pineapple is sweet. Mm. But then that ginger, fresh ginger, has that citrus note to it. I don't know. I wish I had brought you some, and then you could describe them.
I don't know if I can finish this interview, Derek. You may have to bring it home. I'm too distracted.
Drool over the microphone.
Yes, my mouth is filling with saliva. Okay, well, let's move on to Cook of the Week, shall we? Abby Ross Howell, all of 22 years old.
22 years old.
She's been cooking since she was 8 or 9. I like this. The first time she tried a dish, she gave it to her mother and her grandmother to eat. And they said they didn't like it.
They ate it.
If you're going to be a good cook, you don't want your parents telling you, oh, that's fine. Yeah, it's great when it's not.
They didn't actually say they didn't like it.
She could tell.
She saw their faces. And knew. And you know what? I was saying yesterday, she said that she mixed together, that her grandmother always kept hamburger meat in the freezer. And she had this big, like, plastic tub, like what we store Christmas decorations in, that was full of canned goods like peas and carrots and green beans and potatoes and whatnot. And she said she mixed together the hamburger, peas, carrots, and cream of chicken soup. And, you know, I didn't think to ask her if she had cooked the hamburger or if it were raw hamburger, but I'm guessing mom and grandmom would not have eaten raw hamburger.
Yeah.
But I could, if she had used cream of mushroom, it might have been palatable, but I don't think cream of chicken with ground beef.
Well, she kept on experimenting and got better at it, obviously.
Yes.
And she still likes to experiment, doesn't she?
She does, and she makes a lot of her own things. The photo that we have in today's paper is a sandwich that she makes, a club sandwich, and it's got what she calls a kickin' sauce on it, and she made the sauce up herself. That she said that's actually her favorite thing to make is sauces and to experiment with them. And she hopes one day to have her own restaurant and then have that franchised, and then one day to have her products, her sauces and her spices on the shelves at grocery stores.
Yeah, she's got big plans.
She knows what she's doing. She's been at ICC. She's headed to the W in the fall, and she's going to be a business major, which is great if she wants to market her stuff later.
Right.
And then with the culinary arts emphasis. So I think this one has her head on straight.
Yeah, she sure looks like it. That's Abby Ross Howell, from over in Pontotoc County, and that's the Cook of the Week. You can read about her and the other other stories in today's food section in the Daily Journal or at djournal.com. Jenna, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
That does it for another installment of The Memo. But we'll be back tomorrow.
If we remember.
If you can remember to be here.
I think I can remember that.
And if you people can remember to turn us on. Actually, it's like if, you know, if a tree falls in the woods, we're still here whether you listen or not.
Yes.
We appreciate you do listening.
We sure do.
And to listen, you can go to our website, memo.djournal.com, or follow us online on Twitter, at djournalmemo, to find out when new episodes are available.
Mm-hmm. Sure can.
That's right.
I'm on Twitter, at Brad Locke.
I'm on Twitter, at W. Derek Russell.
Hey, I need to remind y'all again that today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods. The Palmer brothers have worked hard on improving every area of the store to make customers' experiences even better than before and to save them money on quality name brand products. Visit the locally owned grocery store on East Main Street. You'll love the look, love the prices, and get helped by the same people you knew at Palmer's. I don't go to Palmer's much because it's like opposite side of town where I live, but popped in there the other day to get a couple of bags of chips for that luncheon we had here. I got two bags of family-sized Lay's, two bags for less than $4.
There you go.
Like, what the heck? This is unheard of, so I might have to start going there more often.
Shoppers Value on East Main Street.
And people will still call it Palmer's, but it's Shoppers Value.
That's it. All the stories we discussed today, including links to find them, you can find online, djournal.com, or in your issue of the Daily Journal. We're online at Twitter, on Twitter, at djournal now.
Yes.
Thursday. Same bat time, same bat channel.
I plan to be here. I might possibly be out next Monday, or at some point next week. We're moving in finally, but probably not till early next week. Got to get the painting done. Got to get the carpeting done. All going to be a bit of hassle.
They don't care about your life.
Well, anyway, may have to take some time off next week, Derek.
Sure. Okay. Well, we'll see you tomorrow then.
Definitely tomorrow.
Okay, tomorrow.
Great.
Goodbye.
Bye.